Chapter 19. There is no instruction in the practice of balance that firmly forbids or firmly commands an observance. If a person chooses to bleed for the sun and stars of Tixkalan, there is no harm in it, as long as they are willing to bleed also for the earth and water of each planet, or for the tears and saliva of a stranger, or for something so small and unimportant as a barren patch of garden. From Katena Commentary on the Practice of Balance, Volume 3 of 57. Anonymous Commentator G. Blue text, left-hand side, dated to approximately 100 Neltok years post-conquest. Anonymous Commentator G writes in Tixkalanli, which may be used to disambiguate them from Anonymous Commentator F, blue text, left-hand side, who writes in Neltaka. For arguments on the validity of F and G as separate persons, see Katena Commentary on the Practice of Balance, Volume 39 of 57. The war dissolved around Nine Hibiscus, like spun sugar in water, too fast for her to grieve. She was Yautlek of this Six of Legions, and she was on the bridge of her flagship, and every report of the sudden hesitance of the enemy, the vanishing of attack forces, the hovering paws of three-ringed death-spitting ships, orbiting Tixkalanli vessels now, observing and slow, instead of smashing them to pieces. Every report came to her. She held them all. She spun up the cartograph strategy table and marked the position of her fleet, the position of her fleet's enemies, kept it updated in as close to real time as possible, while all of the crisis flashpoint of conflict seemed to simply stop, hold itself in patient abeyance. The only moving piece was the 24th, 16 moonrises parabolic compression, and even she seemed to have slowed, surprised by the sudden lack of forceful opposition. Still moving, but that was all right. She'd rather have the 24th in position if this strange detente ended, if what Swarm had done wasn't sufficient. Whatever Swarm had done, he'd at least bought them time. She'd screamed down the narrow cast band, even after he'd cut it off. Screamed nonsense negation she was ashamed of, but it hurt. It hurt like a hole in the center of her, as if the alien acid spit was wearing her away like she was the metal of a ship. That he was either dead or gone or not himself. Her friend, her dearest friend. What was she going to do about all of his plants? About keeping the hydroponics deck in order? About that fucking Kuranian kitten he'd been feeding? What was she supposed to do? Other than watch the thing that she was for, prosecuting a war in any way necessary in all ways possible, become unnecessary, marked out in points of light. She wanted to ask him, Swarm, Swarm, what are you doing? But he wouldn't respond to any message she sent. It was possible that he had simply eaten the fungus and died, and the enemy had understood this as some sort of sufficient sacrifice. No one heard him, or cared to listen. All Shard sight was grief, or was single-minded determination that shut out grief and dying in a scintillation of light. Eight Antidote lost the shape of the shards guarding the parabolic compression. Died again. A simple, ugly death. Someone thinking so clearly, oh, fuck, as a fast-moving piece of debris struck the side of their shard, deformed it, cracked its bubble of ship glass from its seals. Cold, shock cold, and anger. And then quiet. He wanted to stop. He wanted to get out. There was no out. There was no stop. Except that the eyes of shard after shard saw a sudden hesitance in the barrage of ship-dissolving acids and energy cannon fire. A pause, as if the enemy was thinking, altogether, as a whole. A three-ringed ship, hardly larger than a shard itself, hung motionless, and then made a slow and lazy circle around two shards without attacking them at all, as if trying to map their edges. Alien targets vanished, leaving squirming visual discontinuity in their wakes. And Tixkalanli hands trembled on shard controls, hands that had been clenched so tightly they hurt as they were released. There was a stretched-out, held breath, 1,000 shards and 2,000 eyes trying to feel, to understand, to realize they were not dying any longer. All except the shards surrounding the parabolic compression, who did not hear or listen or care, who had a purpose and a design, for whom discontinuity, even favorable discontinuity, was something to be undone, as if it had never been, who had paused for a moment of disbelief, the dissolve of opposition shocking to stillness, and then had heard some voice, some order, or just some heart-vicious want of their own, and accelerated again, faster, faster. There was a convulsion, a shaking. 8 Antidote wondered if he was dying again, or if the 24th Legion had started the death rain bombing, and this was what it would be like, sudden light, hands. And he looked up, dazzled, shocked back to his small singular body, as the golden featureless faceplate of a sunlit removed 4 Crocus's cloud hook from his face and scooped him out of her shard like the stone from a peach. When the order on the Imperial fast courier ship arrived, sealed in one of her brilliance 19 Ads' own white-on-white seals, or a facsimile thereof, 9 Hibiscus had always heard that 19 Ads used animal bone for hers. But that wouldn't have gone through the transmission stations between jump gates. This was a plastic copy. The order inside was almost unnecessary. His Excellency 8 Antidote, Imperial Associate, heir to the Sunspear Throne, it read, on behalf of the government of the star-encompassing Taixkalanli Empire, to the Yautlek Fleet Captain 9 Hibiscus of the 10th Legion. Taixkalan is civilization, and it is our job to safeguard it. Interesting that it came in the voice of the Imperial heir, not the Emperor herself. A complex political maneuver. The Emperor commands war. Her successor practices mercy. It was very designed, in 9 Hibiscus's opinion. Or maybe she was simply exhausted, and everything seemed to be a little beyond what mattered here on her ship, right now. This order forbids the use of civilization-destroying weapons or tactics on the alien threat beyond Parsrawantlak sector, including nuclear strikes on civilian-occupied planetary systems, except in cases where such weapons or tactics are the only thing standing between us and certain civilization-wide death. There was no certain civilization-wide death. Not now. Not anymore. Not since Swarm had done what he'd done. She looked up from the strategy table and said, "To Foam, send Fleet Captain 16 Moonrise an order to stand down. For the moment." The sunlit. There were more than one of them, of course. There were always more than one sunlit. Caught 8 Antidote by the upper arms when his legs wouldn't hold him up. The world kept spinning. Nasturtium Terminal seemed claustrophobic, but not because of how many people were in it this time. Now it felt tiny, compared to being stretched over sectors and sectors of space, so spread thin that being all in himself again was a rush of hideously intense sensation. 8 Antidote squeezed his eyes shut. It didn't help. Even the reddish dark behind his eyelids was so present. One of the sunlit said, "Your Excellency, we have orders to form an escort for you back to the palace." Of course they did. The Emperor was going to kill him. Or maybe she'd let 3 Azimuth do it. He was probably, definitely, a disruptive person now. "You have my permission," he managed to say. His voice sounded like a drunk person's voice. Not steady, sounds blurring into each other. Besides, they didn't need permission. They were going to take him anyway. Distantly, he heard 4 Crocus ask, "Did you get what you needed, Your Excellency?" He didn't know what to tell her. Maybe wasn't good enough. Yes, he'd achieved what he'd set out to do, and no one would ever get that order from 3 Azimuth to kill a planet. And no, He didn't think he'd made any difference at all.
I hope so,
he managed instead, and let the cool, gold-gloved hands of the sunlit lead him away. None of them expected to hear from 20 Cicada again, 3 Seagrass especially. That goodbye had been so final, so absolutely exquisite. She wished she had recorded it. She could have written him such a poem. She might. She might write for him, since it looked like they all might live, at least for long enough to compose a single set of verses. Maybe not long enough for an epic, or anything with a complex caesura-dependent rhyme scheme. There was still the problem of Daj Taratz, and who knew how long the detente 20 Cicada had bought them would last. So when that channel stuttered back into static, open, two-way communication instead of just the one-way frequency 9 Hibiscus had shouted down, 3 Seagrass was not only surprised, but shocked. She'd been almost sure 20 Cicada was dead, or so far transformed that it was a functional equivalency. But there was his voice. It was static, distorted, still, but also off. The rhythms of his phrasing were gone to syncopation, like he was trying to remember speech and assembling it from first principles. His voice flooding the bridge, because 9 Hibiscus hadn't adjusted the volume on that comms feed at all. Singing, he said. And then there was a pause, and again, singing. Oh, we, 9 Hibiscus said, swarm? With a kind of broken hope that made 3 Seagrass cringe. Yes, he said. Mostly, yes, we are. It's appropriate, that name. Hello, Malo. Hello, we. Our, wait for the wheel, Malo. Love her for us, for me. And we, us and the others, we want to establish. Is there the envoy?
Yes, said 3 Seagrass. I'm here.
And is there the other one? The memory person, the spook and her pet.
He sounded like he'd found the phrase somewhere in memory, a single phrase recalled altogether.
The stationer.
I'm here too,
Mahid said. 9 Hibiscus was staring at them, her eyes glitter wet with tears she was clearly refusing to shed.
We want to establish diplomatic protocol. For a period of ceasefire.
3 Seagrass looked to 9 Hibiscus, wordless, asking for permission. 9 Hibiscus nodded, a bare fraction of a movement.
We accept a ceasefire, she said. What sort of diplomatic protocol did you have in mind, 20 Cicada?
Using his name, in case there was enough of him left that his name meant something.
Send us people. People to prove we are people. The memory sharers. To talk with.
Mahid said. Stationers, you mean? A long pause.
Yes,
said 20 Cicada, or what had been 20 Cicada.
Stationers, pilots, sunlit, all. And we are people, if... We are singing if...
All. Everyone. Everyone, takes Kalanli or not, who had ever been part of some kind of shared mind. 3 Seagrass looked at Mahit, helpless with how little she understood of what this meant. What kind of person could be useful here?
Yes, said Mahit, and nodded to 3 Seagrass. The diplomats will be humans who understand collectivity.
If it was even possible for anyone to understand the kind of collectivity 20 Cicada had rendered himself up to, 3 Seagrass wasn't so sure. And then Two Foam said,
Yautlek, 16 Moonrise won't answer our comms. She's still on approach target to the alien system, approach and moving fast.
Watching 9 Hibiscus try to reorient herself from talking to what was left of her adjutant, to deal with whatever fleet captain 16 Moonrise was doing, was like watching a warship attempt to reverse thrust, a wrench, a straining, not entirely effective,
It made Three Seagrass wince.
She's what? Asked the Outlek.
Still on attack, Victor, Two Foam repeated. With shatter bombs primed, she hasn't acknowledged any of the stand-down orders you sent.
Nine Hibiscus's face was a mask. They're not my orders. They're the Emperor's. Send it again. Tell her if she continues on this course, she is in direct insubordination to the Emperor of all Tixkalan.
Two Foam turned back to the console. Her eyes flickered behind her cloud hook. Her hands flew through the projected communication space of the fleet. There was a strangled, hideous silence. Even the creature on the other end of the line, Swarm, it was easier for Three Seagrass to think of him as Swarm and not 20 Cicada now, draw some separation. Even he was quiet.
No acknowledgement, said Two Foam at last. The 24th is speeding up. She doesn't want to hear us, Yautlek.
Three Seagrass thought. She doesn't want to hear us, or the aliens, or anything but her own course of action. And then, bright and vivid and nauseating, this is going to be the shortest ceasefire in the history of the Empire. She watched the mask of Nine Hibiscus's face crack, an internal decision made, one that flayed her as raw as a barbarian, all of her features twisted in certainty and grief at once. And she couldn't figure out anything at all she could say. And she'd thought herself a negotiator. That would change anyone's course now. It was easier if Nine Hibiscus thought of the static scattered voice on the other side of the comlink down to Paloa 2 as someone already a ghost. Or, equally heart-flaying, equally absurd, some other person she had never known, who happened to share a name with her dearest friend, the adjutant who had served with her for more than 2 indictions. A coincidence, no more, no less. It was easier, and it made it possible for her to ask him, ask it, ask them, ask the thing down on Paloa 2, whatever it was, to ask without her voice catching, without weeping.
Swarm, I need you to do me a favor. You and the rest of whatever you are now. It's a favor, and it's a sign of our good faith in whatever ceasefire you brokered. Do you hear me?
She shouldn't have called him Swarm. It was both too intimate and too appropriate now.
We hear you, he said.
And aside from the static and the use of a plural pronoun, he sounded exactly the same as he always had. Casual ease. A soldier in perfect command of all of his resources and willing to bend them to her command. Nine Hibiscus rolled her shoulders back, braced herself, her hands flat on the cartograph table, grounded in her ship.
I am going to give you the coordinates and approach vector of 16 Moonrise and the parabolic compression to the inhabited planet she is targeting, she said. The exact coordinates.
We will see her coming, then, said whatever was left of 20 Cicada. We will be ready for her, when she comes. Reach for her. Stretch out ourselves, net her, and crack her open. Give her to the void home.
The sound that filled the bridge was a sigh, almost a melody, a falling tone. The sound that filled the bridge was the grim silence of her own horrified officers. Nine Hibiscus had done this once before, not so long ago. But that soldier, she had begged to die under her fleet captain's hands rather than dissolve in alien spit acid. And this command was something altogether different. She had to be unwavering, unwavering and sure. And she was still going to lose these people, lose at least the effortless trust they'd had in her. She was going to let her adjutant and the aliens that had devoured him and killed a planet and destroyed so many of her ships already kill another one, kill a fleet captain and her flagship. All those lives on the parabolic compression, were they worth the lives on that alien planet? Were they worth the preservation of this uncertain ceasefire? Could she dishonor 20 Cicada's sacrifice by pretending one flagship was more important than ending a war? No.
She couldn't. Somehow she had to stop those bombs from being dropped. And if the Emperor's command wasn't enough for 16 Moonrise, she'd have to let the aliens do her work for her. Unless...
Adjutant, she snapped, crisp command, calling whatever was left of 20 Cicada back to himself, to how they had always been together, logistics and command. I will give you these coordinates and allow the aliens to strike the parabolic compression if, and only if, you believe that it is possible to take out the bridge, and the bridge alone. There are 3,000 Tixkalan Litzlam on that ship. They are our people. Don't let them go to waste for 16 Moonrise.
A hissing sort of silence. The open channel. And then, soft as a haunting, 20 Cicada saying to her,
I would never, Malo. You know that.
And so we know that.
She gave him the coordinates. Do you really think the Empire and what they've just yoked themselves to is going to want a barbarian stationer as one of their negotiators, Dismar?
Asked Daj Taratz. He'd come to stand next to Mahit, too close for her liking, come to stand next to her, and murmur to her in stationer as they watched a Yautlek of the Tixkalanli fleet call down a precision strike on her own forces. Mahit hadn't ever imagined such a thing to be possible. The Tixkalan, she knew. The Tixkalan Yaskandar knew, that Taratz believed in. The ever-devouring, elegant maw of an empire. Teeth light across the throat of every non-Tixkalanli system. Light, until they bit down and broke the spine, shook a culture to nothing. That, Tixkalan, would never have cut away a part of itself to preserve a barely cohered peace. She thought, too, of the fleet captain's 16 Moonrise, an electrum-shaded flash in the dark of her assigned quarters, come to negotiate, or warn. Mahit hadn't quite put her finger on which. And now she never would. And it didn't matter. The three-ringed ships would excise all negotiation and all warning that 16 Moonrise might have possessed, eliminate them as an option. Preserve themselves and their planet.
Themselves, their planet, and the rest of the parabolic compression, Yaskandar murmured. That's some little weight on the side of this alliance being a good idea at all, that they can understand now that humans die and are not replaced.
Not very easily replaced, Mahit thought, and felt her Imago laugh. Electric shivering all around her, replaced with extreme difficulty and complexity. Daj Taratz clicked his tongue behind his teeth.
I see, he said, as if Mahit had said anything at all. You either believe it, or you don't care whether or not it is true.
She turned to him. She and Yaskandar wanted, a savage little flare, to talk to him only in the language that he hated and that she loved, speak the language of his enemy, drip poetry from her mouth. But it wasn't her language. It would never be. She knew that as clearly as she knew anything. In stationer, she said, they let me negotiate a first contact, Taratz, right along with them. Why not have a stationer as part of the diplomatic protocol? Especially as they know quite well that we are far better at collective memory than they are.
They should never have known about Imago technology, Taratz said.
Mahit took a breath. Another. Slow. No, she said, quite probably not. The bright stab of pain down her ulnar nerves again. Yaskandar's vicious displeasure at her disagreement with him. But it's done now, counselor. Done a long time ago. The Empire knows. And we might. If Lascelles led this diplomatic delegation, we might have more bargaining power than we've had in generations.
And the price, Dismar? The price of putting one of our Imago lines into that conglomeration that calls itself we. The price of Tixkalan, wanting even more of us than our self-possession, and our language, and our economic independence.
Mahit said, louder. The price was higher, when it was the whole station smashed under those three-ringed ships. And you know it!
She hadn't meant to shout. Hadn't meant to attract the attention of half the faces on the bridge, the ones who weren't watching the convergence of the parabolic compression and 100 spinning ring ships on the cartograph table.
I have, said Daj Taratz, spent my entire life on a ruin.
And gestured with his hand, as if to encompass not only the bridge and Paloa II beyond it, but all Tixkalan, and all Tixkalan's enemies. All his long project of drawing Tixkalan past its borders into an unwinnable war, undone. Tixkalan would not beat itself to pieces against an unsailable shore, not here, not this way. It was Yaskander who said, with Mahit's tongue, ruins can be rebuilt, in peacetime. And it was Yaskander who helped Mahit stay on her feet and keep her face still when Taratz said,
You were a mistake, and so was your entire Imago line, and I will make sure Counselor Omnarbat knows I agree with her. There is no place for you on the cell. Don't ever come home, Dasmar.
Chapter 20. The motion of a swift is an impenetrable language, as incomprehensible to me as the thoughts of a flower when it opens its petals at dawn, without memory or mind. A coherent logic and a dance, but not one I can shape within myself. All my attempts are approximation. One cannot render meaning in a language one finds meaningless. Nevertheless, I know there is a design, a speaking, a world just on the other side of shadow, untouchable, but nonetheless real. 3 years since I came home from Abrecht, and I still dream of the swifts running. In dreams, sometimes I understand them. From Asymptote, Fragmentation, Essay Cycle by 11 Lathe. Nine Hibiscus knew the shape of the parabolic compression without ever having set foot on its decks, knew it as she knew her own ship. Eternal-class flagships were all built on the same bones, the same enormous and delicately balanced armatures of steel and ship glass, the same design. She could be standing on the parabolic compression's bridge and have the arc of vision she had now, the consoles in the same places. Only the uniforms changed. Exchange the 10th for the 24th, one fleet captain for another. Almost she wished that she could make that switch. Take 16 Moonrise's place, her hands on the navigational controls, flying her ship on a brutal fast trajectory through alien space. Her mouth shaped around the insubordinate words.
Don't listen. Even emperors can be mistaken. There's nothing about these enemies worth talking to. All they do is poison us, and they will poison us forever if we don't burn them out.
Nine Hibiscus could imagine it all too easily, and not only because she had cored out her own belly with guilt when she gave Swarm the order, the permission, to destroy 16 Moonrise if they could. Guilt wasn't a sufficient impetus to want to die in place of one of your soldiers. Wondering if that soldier was right after all. Now that was enough to wish yourself on the bridge of a distant flagship, even as it shattered under alien energy cannon fire, a blaze of killing blue, pinpoint precise. Swarm was always precise. Bloody fucking stars. This was never going to stop hurting, was it? And then a sparkling cloud, glitter of glass and metal, spreading slowly in the void. What was left of the parabolic compression slowed its arc forward. Somewhere in that glitter was all that remained of 16 Moonrise. The alien ships withdrew, as quickly as they'd appeared. Whatever ceasefire they had brokered was holding, for now.
Nine Hibiscus let herself wish it hadn't. Wish it as savagely and miserably as she liked. She was a soldier, a leader of soldiers. She was not meant to have ended a war like this. And then locked her wishing away, as if she'd swallowed slow poison her own self. 19 ads brought him a bowl of tea. It was the second most surprising thing 8 Antidote had ever seen her do. The first had been when she hugged him, without preamble, taking him from the guiding hands of the sunlit in public, in the gardens right in front of Palace Earth, and wrapping him in her arms. She was very thin, and taller than him, and her arms were ropes of muscle. He had thought she'd throw him in prison, or just lock him in his rooms forever, which would be the political version of the same thing, but this, a fast, savage hug. He couldn't remember when someone had hugged him last. Hugs were for little kids. He'd hugged to Cartograph, 5 Agate's son, when they'd stopped playing. But that wasn't the same thing at all. The Emperor hadn't locked him up, or locked him away. She took him to her suite, kept a hand on his shoulder, firm and guiding, even when the world slipped sideways, a shadow in a corridor resolving into the shadow of some shard's vision of 3-ringed death. A memory, he told himself, not real. Not anymore. Took him to her suite, and told him that she'd be back in a little while, when she had finished wrapping up the day, and left him there. Unguarded. Cloud hookless. Probably his cloud hook was going around and around on the subway still. He could have left, or gone out the window, or anything. Instead, he sat on a window seat behind the long white tufted couch and stared into the early afternoon sun on the water gardens below and tried to remember where he was, where the edges of him were. He didn't know if he'd ever go all the way back to just being in one place, being absolutely sure of who and where and what he was. It was dizzying and awful, and he guessed he deserved it. The afternoon stretched into evening. He slept a little. Maybe. He might have dreamed he slept, or imagined it, or remembered someone else's sleeping. But when he was all the way awake again, the world outside the window was flooded blue, and fuchsia, with the end of sunset. And then the Emperor herself came back, and sat on the windowsill with him, and handed him a bowl of tea. Clear green and sweetly astringent. He wondered if she'd made it. It seemed like the perfectly absurd sort of thing she'd do. He drank some. His hands still worked, and so did his throat. And he tasted the tea with only the taste buds that were absolutely and definitely his. So that helped. It did. He said, "I'm not sorry," because he wasn't. And because if the Emperor was going to punish him, he wanted to deserve it. 19 ads looked at him for a very long time, long enough that he wanted to blush and cringe and get away, even though he did none of those things. Then she nodded, as if she'd come to some satisfying conclusion and said, "Good." 8 Antidote blinked in surprise. "Good? Good. You're sure what you did was right. You had your reasons to do it. You made a plan. You executed that plan. You didn't harm anyone else in the process, aside from scaring that shard pilot half to death, thinking she'd gotten the Imperial heir killed or brain damaged, and she'll be all right. So, good. What did I tell you about successors? That you would rather an annoying one than a dull one." 19 ads, when she smiled, looked more dangerous than when she didn't. "You are absolutely an annoying successor, little spy, and not dull at all." Did what I did work?" he asked, suddenly helpless not to. The Emperor held out her hand, tilted it one way and then the other. Maybe so, maybe no. "What did you want to have happen?" she asked. 8 Antidote thought about being a spy, about keeping all his own desires as close as possible unrevealed, even when asked directly, about choosing, always, if he was going to tell. He could keep doing that. He probably should. He'd be an emperor, if there was an empire left, and he couldn't just tell people what he wanted to have happen. They'd use it against him. But 19 ads had told him about his ancestor the emperor, and the machines from LaSalle Station, about what he might have been. She'd told him that, and he'd used it against her, and yet they were both still right here.
I wanted the Tixkalan you told me about, he said. 80 times 80 years of peace, and no one deciding a whole planet is worth killing just to prove a point. I wanted to stop Three Azimuth's order, and I wanted to send mine instead, and I want us to win the war anyway.
The war is ending right now, and that planetary system remains intact, said 19 ads. I expect you were part of that. What you did inside that shard.
The war is ending, she'd said, but not how or why, and 8 Antidote realized he was shaking hard enough that tea spilled over his knuckles. The Emperor took the bowl away from him, held it for him.
It's called the shard trick, he started. They can all do it, not just me.
Pilot 4 Crocus explained in detail, said 19 ads. She didn't sound pleased. It wasn't really the sort of thing a person was pleased about, 8 Antidote guessed. Technology like that? Like the sunlit? But more. He wasn't going to tell her that it was still going on inside his mind. He wasn't. He didn't know what she'd do, to him or in general.
11 Laurel didn't want you to know, he said instead.
Oh, 19 ads said, like he'd given her something she needed. A last part of a pattern slotting into place.
That's useful, 8 Antidote.
Thank you for that. I wasn't sure which one of them, the minister or the undersecretary, was responsible.
Are you going to...
He didn't even know how to ask the question. The Emperor shook her head. No, she said. I can watch him much more closely inside the Ministry of War than I'd ever be able to if I let him out unsupervised into the fleet.
And me?
Am I going to do something to you? He nodded. She sighed. I wish, you know, that you could trust me. But you wouldn't be you if you did. No, 8 Antidote. No, I'm not going to do anything to you, except wait for you to grow up and take this job out of my hands. It was only in the quiet afterward, when he'd gone back to his own room and crawled into his bed, that he remembered what 19 ads had said about Fleet Captain 9 Hibiscus and why she'd made her Yautlek after what she'd done on Kuran. Not because I thought she was too dangerous to keep alive, little spy. Because I thought she might just be dangerous enough to stay alive. Remembered that. And couldn't fall asleep at all. Everything on the hydroponics deck of Wait for the Wheel was green. The air felt luxurious, almost too thick for Mahit to breathe. There were flowers, lotuses, lilies, all through the rice and the vegetable gardens, mixed in like they were as necessary as calories. Probably they had been, to 20 Cicada. This had been his kingdom. 3 Seagrass had told her so, told her all about the conversation they'd had, here, when she'd been convinced that the last thing 20 Cicada would ever do would be to let Tixkalan allow a species as wantonly and uncaringly destructive as the aliens had seemed, to exist. The two of them were leaning on the decorative railing. Mahit wondered who was standing where. Was she where 20 Cicada had been? Or was 3 Seagrass? Whose narrative was going around again?
Ring composition,
Iskander told her, and she said, overdetermined, back at him. Call and response. Without prompting or preamble,
only taking enough time to set her shoulders and lift her chin, like Mahit was a problem that needed as much of her headlong determination as any of the negotiation she'd done on the bridge, Three Seagrass asked her, "Do you want to come back with me?" At least she hadn't said, "Do you want to come home with me?"
"No," Mahit told her. She couldn't look at her while she did it.
"No, but where's back?"
"The jewel of the world," said Three Seagrass, which, of course, there was no other real place for a Tixkalan Leetslam, was there?
"I mean, I have a flat. I have to do the dishes, probably talk to the Emperor herself, too, but if it's the city you don't want, I could... I mean, there's got to be some system out there which needs an overqualified secretà and has a halfway decent poetry salon. I could get transferred, is what I'm saying."
"Read," Mahit said, soft, and Three Seagrass stopped talking, turned to her, tipped her head up. Her eyes were very dark and very wide. She was still so small. Mahit forgot, most of the time. She bent down and kissed her mouth. Not for long. Not long enough to be yes.
"Don't do that for me," she said. "Don't leave the city. Go home. Do your dishes. Talk to the Emperor if there's time after doing the dishes."
Three Seagrass snickered. It was a wet sound. The sound a person made when they were laughing, but it meant to cry.
"Dishes. Then her brilliance, the edge shine of a knife, in that order, yes, fine.
And where will you go?"
"I don't know," Mahit said. It was true. There were no places left. There was no such thing as home, not for her. Not anymore. Daj Taratz had taken his flitter ship back through the Unhamamet Gate. The ceasefire 20 Cicada had brokered extended throughout the entirety of the alien fleet, whether its prey had been Tixkalanli warships or Lassell itself. All humans were one thing, to them. One sacrifice had, for now, bought a collective peace. Lassell had not even been touched. Mahit had heard the transmissions from Tixkalanli supply ships passing by that proved it. And yet she believed what Taratz had told her on the bridge. If she came back to Lassell station, while he and Aknel Amnarbat were in power, she would die under their hands. One or the other, heritage or miners, all safety torn up, tossed away. And for what? "Now we are exiles, truly," she thought, and couldn't even muster up an internal tone of recrimination. She'd been right, all along, and Yaskander hadn't. But Yaskander would have followed Three Seagrass back to her flat, with its undone dishes, its promise of poetry salons. Yaskander would have taken that offer the first time she made it, 3 months and a war ago.
"It doesn't have to be with me," said Three Seagrass. "If that's your problem with going back to the city, that I still don't understand why you feel half the ways you do about how much I like you, but I promise I'm perfectly capable of pretending we don't know each other, or never kissing you again. And you're still the ambassador if the Emperor says you are, so there's work."
Mahit cut her off, a hand on her shoulder, gentle as she could.
"No, it's not you.
Reed, I don't understand why I feel half the ways I do about how much I like you either, but I like you a great deal."
"You could keep explaining," Yaskander murmured. "Sometimes even Tixkalan Leetslam learn to see us."
"I want," Mahit thought, and with that phrase felt all the tumbling headlong desire to fall and be subsumed and be, oh, the Tixkalan Leetslam she'd imagined herself in all those long ago language instruction classes when she'd called herself Nine Orchid and thought poetry would be enough to make her the kind of person that a Tixkalan Leetslam would automatically think of as a person.
"If it's not me," Three Seagrass asked, "then what? If you tell me you're planning to join the fungal hive mind, I'm going to be angry and also not believe you.
You're enough people already. And you like being a person, not a... that.
I'm just Mahit Dismar, Mahit said, wry, imago and all. Just one person.
I want,
she thought again. And Yaskander finished for her.
To go home.
No such place.
She tried again. Three seagrass, I want work, and I want things I can't have, that don't exist or never did, and I want, if you ask me to come to the city with you a third time, I want to be able to say yes and mean it.
Three seagrass was quiet, listening, turning over what Mahit had said.
Mahit imagined the problem like a pebble in her mouth, an impediment to clear verse. After a moment, she took a deep breath of the green-laced air and settled her shoulders.
I want someone to remember that I like being called Reed, she said, and to not be bored. You're never boring. I like your... that graphic story. I don't know stories like that one, and I'd like to. You make me have to think, Mahit, and that's not fair. No one else makes me work this hard and like it at the same time.
Mahit found herself laughing, soft, a hand covering her mouth. Are you complimenting or insulting me? Three Seagrass considered this with more gravitas than Mahit thought it strictly deserved.
I don't know, she said finally. Both, probably. Mahit.
Yes. She could see Three Seagrass steeling herself, drawing her shoulders back, breathing from the diaphragm. Like Mahit was an oration contest she wanted to win.
What if... those other systems I mentioned, what if you went there?
She said. Mahit opened her mouth to reply, but Three Seagrass waved her quiet with a gesture of one hand.
You went there, she went on, and I didn't. Her brilliance would send you anywhere you wanted to go. It wouldn't be the jewel of the world, it'd be somewhere... new. And you could write to me, if you wanted me to not be bored. I'd write to you. You could mail me more volumes of The Perilous Frontier, and I'd send you new poems and anything else you'd want to hear from me.
You would? Mahit asked. After all this time, she had apparently retained the capacity to be shocked by sweetness.
I would, Three Seagrass said. And you could decrypt your own mail. Promise.
She was bad at smiling like a stationer. She showed every tooth she had, the bright bone white of them, a smile like starlight and threat. Mahit wanted, abruptly, to teach her how to do it right. She smiled back. She felt brittle and fragile and on the verge of tears, and still she didn't want to not smile.
a good offer, Mahit, Yaskander told her. It's kinder than any I ever had.
The Emperor's sixth direction, promising peace in exchange for betrayal. 19 ads, who didn't see light between loving someone and thinking they needed to die before they could do harm. Compared to those, letters and a temporary post on some distant provincial Tixkalanli planet seemed like something she could countenance.
I'd write back, she said. All the time.
Postlude. To think as a person, and to not think language. To think fractal scattersong, the shape of an unfamiliar body, an inclusion like a garnet in the matrix of a stone. Stone, still, but otherwise crystalline and complete. Inside that crystal language, like the mouth cries of unpersons but made singable, lodges and reverberates, isolated until necessary. We, singing all through us, singing harmonic variants, vibration on an almost interfering frequency. This body, that body. This body had a call sign when it wasn't a person, and it is not the only one. This body was called Leap,
and that body gray pattern, this body sweetling, and that body cleverer than littermates. And so this new body, singing in the wee, called swarm, which is a laughing name now. Some call signs are exactly like the person that is wee, and that is glitter sharp delight. The body leap is a building designing body, a structure maker, whose structures are gossamer spaces for springing across. So too the body swarm. To think that this body was a person before it was a person, and called itself appropriately even so.
We did not name this body, the unfamiliar body sings. We were named. We were known.
The unfamiliar body sings the inside of a Tix Kalanli ship, a scatter of images and warmth, another body, a commander body, a person not a person in a thousand memory points reassembled.
We, when we are Tix Kalan, are known without singing,
swarm tells the we.
We, when we are Tix Kalan, are known with language only, and still clearly.
There is some disbelief within the reaches of the we. To think language would be so transparent as to allow knowing.
Language is not so transparent, 20 Cicada thinks.
Thinks out, a long-reaching flicker through all of himself, which is all of the we together, and still himself, our selves.
Language is not so transparent, but we are sometimes known even so. If we are lucky.
Slide shimmer query. The endless curiosity and want and reaching that is the we, thinking without language. Show us then. And on Paloa too, in the desert night, waiting for the shuttle that will take his body to a more hospitable environment. What remains of 20 Cicada? Settles, cross-legged in the sand, and begins to try. We hope you've enjoyed this production of A Desolation Called Peace, a Macmillan audio production for Tor Books. This title was produced by Steve Wagner. Text copyright 2021 Arkady Martin. Production copyright 2021 by Macmillan Audio. All rights reserved.